The life of Gustavus Adolphus, the boy king in Denmark. Well, Gustav Vasa and his two eldest sons had come to the throne without any other pledges being demanded of them than the old regal oath as laid down by the Landslag. Sigismund and Karl, in addition, given charters, but these had in the main been designed to afford security to the established religion. Gustav Adolf's charter was of a different order. In many respects, it approximated in principle, if not detailed, a precise regulation of the mutual relations between the rights of the king and the people. It bore within its seed of a development which might have ended in a supremacy of the Rad, reminiscent of medieval practice, if the monarchy had been represented by the king. As it turned out, events quite another direction. Without violating the form of the constitution, Gustav Adolf managed to use it for his own purposes. That this was possible is to be explained not the least by his unceasing cooperation with the man who stood out as the dominating personality among the aristocracy. In January of 1612, immediately before his departure for the battlefront in the border provinces, Gustav Adolf appointed Axel Oxenstierna as chancellor by a commission whose ample terms are the measure of the trust he reposed to him, and in such an appointment was a tacit promise soon to be redeemed that the rule of secretaries was to be called to account. The charter referred the new emperor in many matters of importance to intimate collaboration with Duke Johann of Ostergotland. Alterations in the law and more important questions of foreign policy required his concurrence, as well as that of the Rad and the Estates, before a decision could be made. On the other hand, nothing was said in this connection about the Queen Mother, who had the guardianship of the interests of Carl Philip and the right to govern his Duchy of Sondermanland until he came of age. But in reality, Christina's wishes came in the next few years to count for almost as much as those of Johann, whose position was always embarrassed in consequence to his close blood ties with the arch enemy of the dynasty, King Sigismund. When Gustav Adolf assumed the government, he took the title of elected king and hereditary prince of the Swedes, the Goths, and the Wends. He left out the title King of the Lapps of Nordland, which his father had borne and which Christian IV, sending a challenge, had included amongst his grounds for declaring war. The omission was a clear expression of his desire to liquidate the ambitious northern policy, which King Karl had tried so obstinately to carry through at the expense of Denmark-Norway. It is not until Gustav Adolf's coronation, nearly 6 years later, that we get the final disappearance of his royal style of the word chosen, or as it runs into some documents, elected, a form of words which had made it plain to the world that his power yet lacked solemn confirmation. During the whole of the first year of Gustav Adolf's reign, the Danish army stood on Swedish soil. The young king was engaged incessantly in leading defense and counterattack. In spite of this, Denmark was one of the powers which went furthest in acknowledging from the start the validity of the new monarch's title. The explanation of this apparently curious circumstance lies in Denmark's political tactics. King Christian had considered it safest when he began hostilities to repudiate Sigismund's claim to the crown of Sweden, for he half hoped that he might be able to bring his northern neighbor under the dominion and obedience of Denmark. To cut short any discussions, he abruptly refused to concede to the Polish king the title of King of Sweden, which had hitherto always been accorded to him. When some years after making peace with Sweden at Nord in 1613, he effected a rapprochement with Poland, he found it opportune to restore the Swedish title to Sigismund under the pretext that it was a matter of equity and could be conceded without prejudice to the rights of Gustav Adolf. During the peace negotiations in the autumn of 1612, however, the Danes had contended that Gustav Adolf must still be held to be a minor, since he had not yet completed his 18th year, and demanded that the Swedish plenipotentiaries should produce commissions drawn in the name of the estates. As a matter of fact, the question was adjusted without complications, but it's easy to perceive in what light the young king's position appeared to his suspicious neighbor. Now, this is just the beginning, but you can imagine you're 17 years old or at this age, and you're negotiating with foreign countries who see youth as an advantage for them, but not in the case of Gustav Adolf, or Gustavus Adolphus, as I will soon be calling him. So next time, we will be looking at some more of Denmark, but particularly Russia, because it's Russia where he's going to be given a title that is quite interesting. The sources for this are Gustavus Adolphus versus Wallenstein by Pike, Gustav Adolphus Sweden and the 30 Years' War, 1630-32 by Volk, The Lion of the North by Henty, Gustav Adolphus the Great by Onlund, and Gustav Adolphus and the Rise of Sweden by Roberts, Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 1, Infantry, by Brzezinski. Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 2, Cavalry, by Brzezinski. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise. If you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.